we all have Zoom fatigue. We're all kind of maybe a little bit worn out by looking into the box. So just for a minute, I'm going to ask you in a second for a one-word check-in. And the way this is going to work is you're just going to say it whenever you feel like you, I'm not going to call on you. You're just going to say the one word whenever you feel like you might want to say it. But just take a minute kind of to check in, get out of your head, get into your body for a second, and just see what's here for you that that one word might be. Okay, so whenever you're ready, just go ahead and say one word.
Energized.
Thank you.
Anxious.
Ready.
Curious. Optimistic.
Happy.
Happy.
Stimulated. Come on.
Connected.
Open.
Did you miss anybody?
I said interested, but I think I was muted at the time.
It's okay. So interested and muted. In the chat too. We've got happy and curious in the chat. Cool. Okay. So if you haven't been on this call before, the way we usually run it is I'm going to read some summaries of the articles just to refresh our memory on what they were about. And then we will kind of go around and get some themes of what we saw in the articles, and then we'll kind of talk about our favorite and least favorite. So we'll use polling for that instead of going round robin. That might save us a little bit of time. And then we'll start to dig into what surprised us, what made us react in the articles, and what we want to talk about more. All right, so here we go, reading the summaries here. So the first one was the four behaviors that help leaders manage a crisis. So over the past few weeks, a coronavirus pandemic has dramatically changed the roles and responsibilities of organizational leaders. I'm going to skip over some of the summary part. The article argues that leaders need to cultivate four behaviors in themselves and their teams: decide with speed over precision, adapt boldly, reliably deliver, and engage for impact. So that was the one from Harvard Business Review about managing a crisis. The second one is the new boardroom imperative, from agility to resilience. The article asserts that agility helps maximize the upside and resilience minimizes downside risk. So it's sort of kind of weighing this. And it suggests that today we need to minimize downside risk. So we need to focus more on resilience. The four key principles were bureaucracy to emergence, formalization to personalization, efficiency to reliability, and profit to meaning. That was the one from Julian Birkinshaw from Forbes. Okay, the third article was to weather a crisis, build a network of teams. This was the McKinsey article. And they say, in response to the coronavirus, employees need to respond with urgency without senior executives and traditional governance slowing things down. How do you do this? The answer: create a robust network of teams empowered to operate outside of the current hierarchy and bureaucratic structures of the organization. The article recommends four steps leaders should take to create a cohesive and effective network of teams. From bureaucracy to emergence. Maybe I moved this to the wrong spot. I think all the articles had four things. Then the next article is what newly remote teams need right now. This was from the Knowledge article. It was a blog report on the result of a recent survey on the transition to remote working during the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. The authors argue that while the technological side of adaptation seems to be working, the organizational side is presenting serious challenges. They conclude with four recommendations on how managers and other employees can intervene and support the organizational transition to remote working. Restructure work processes to be self-contained, more online socializing, improve written communication skills, and use data to improve your org design. And then the final article was the journal article on Triple Helix organizations. The article discusses Triple Helix organizations, the collaborative arrangements between government, business, and academia, provides an overview of the Triple Helix organization and identifies some of the reasons for their success and failure. It draws on the principles of cybernetics and organizational design to argue that transparency and credible sanctions for the self-interested behavior are important requirements for successful triple helix organizations. The authors also stress the importance of separation of measurement and enforcement. Cool? So let's jump to, let's go around and get the themes. So let me make sure I have everybody who wants to participate. If you haven't already, go ahead in that participant box and indicate if yes, if you'll be participating. Michelle, will you be participating? Because you're the one that I had on my list that wanted to participate and I don't have a check. Is he still here? Yeah. If you are, go ahead.
You're asking about Michelle Nabte?
Yes, you.
I don't believe that I received the article newsletter. I signed up for the form, but I don't think that I'm actually on the newsletter list. So it would be difficult for me to participate other than just through my own experience and any kind of, you know, academic wisdom that I have. But other than that,
awesome. Well, feel free to jump in, but I won't put you on the spot. So this just frees you from being put on the spot.
Right.
I just put you on the spot.
Great. And I'm not sure if there's any, if that's, you know, highlighting a particular technical issue with newsletter versus the Zoom connection.
I'll circle back with Tanya if she's not actually gnoming right now and listening. Cool. And then also Ruben, I had you on the list of people who wanted to participate. Are you participating? Ruben? All right, well, I'm gonna skip to you. I'll touch base, check in with you in a minute. All right, so let's go around and see what themes you noticed in these articles besides that they all had the number 4. All right, Anne, how about we start with you? You're still on mute. Are you not able to unmute yourself? Hey, Tanya, can you see if you can unmute Anne?
I'm not sure if she even caught that you were connecting with her.
She looks like she wants. Anne, do you?
Sorry. Okay. I misheard you. I'm sorry. Yeah, I was waiting for somebody else to join in. I'm so sorry.
Okay. You're alphabetically first, so here we go.
So, hello, everybody. You were asking me about themes. Mm-hmm. I guess... some of the things that I picked up, sorry, I'm just going to pull something across my other screen so I can see the notes I took. I think I saw themes in particular clearly around leadership, you know, and personal accountability and ownership and empowering people to be able to make decisions whether they would normally be able to do so or not in situations that are less than perfect. And enabling them to do so in a way that may not be perfect, you know, so sort of shedding, I suppose, some of the risk parameters that might normally be in place. I think that seemed to come through for me a couple of times.
Yeah.
Is that enough?
Sounds great. Thank you. Let's see. So we're going alphabetically this time. So Chris, how about you? Anything jump out for you?
Sure. I think similar to Anne, there was the theme around teaming, collaboration, the whole piece about empowerment, really structuring the organization to be more responsive. But a lot of that was through, you know, using high-performing work teams, the notion of self-organizing, and underneath that, collaboration, because effective teams really do need a lot of that collaboration. And I think what was heartening is I think that those themes are kind of a bias that all of us have. We look at designing organization, creating that kind of capability within organizations.
Yeah.
My 2 cents worth.
Thank you. All right, Chris. For now.
So Maybe the one thing that I thought was interesting as a theme was which of the articles focused on the here and now and which articles focused on the long term. And that drove me to, for this month, that drove my decisions on. Got some feedback. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. You're getting an echo.
Can you hear me okay now?
Yep. Better.
Ditch the technology. So, I've still got lots of feedback. Sorry.
That's better.
Try it now. I thought maybe when Gina popped on, that might be causing some sort of issue.
Okay. So the theme around which of the articles focused on the here and now versus the long term, that ultimately drove my decision in terms of the articles that I thought added most value to me and that I found most interesting this month, and the ones that I thought were quite weak. That was the big thing across the five. I was looking for the stuff that said, yes, help. How do we help organizations and each other right now? But how do we make meaningful decisions that would still be the right stuff in the medium to long term? The articles that focused on just the here and now, I had a bit of a reaction to.
Mm. So you like the long-term ones better. That's a little teaser for later. Thank you. All right, let's see. Jody, did you see any themes?
Hi. Oh, yeah, the themes was quite difficult, I thought, this week. And so, I mean, you pointed out the obvious one where I noticed there were four in many, the number four. But what I did notice, it's not really a theme and maybe it's not that surprising, but there was quite a bit of, advising in these articles, like you should do this and that. But at the same time, they were obviously quite speculative. So, I mean, it's obviously that no one's really done research on the current crisis, there's not so much research there. So I found that in some of the articles, and maybe I'm a bit critical of this, there was a lot of kind of, well, you should do this and this. And there was a bit of like, maybe not being very sure or clear on what really is the right course of action.
Great, thank you. Miriam, I saw you joined. Will you be participating today?
Yes.
Okay, great. Would you like to share any themes you saw in the articles?
I think one of the things that sort of stood out to me was if some folks were either reworking ideas and kind of trying to force fit like sort of other thoughts from different time frames into like sort of this current space, or were they actually trying to bring forward any kind of new thinking? And there's little bits of new thinking, but I think there was quite a bit of like reworking what we think already works.
Hmm. Yeah. I noticed that too. It was like, let's pull up the old stuff and slap a coronavirus label on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right. Nadezda, how about you?
Yeah, I think just building on top with already shared, what I notice is the emerging topic is certain expectations on the behaviors from leadership under pressure, and the overall what should or shouldn't be done. Not that many new things for me, but it also reminded me of another article that's not related to those in the newsletter, but it reminded me about the difference between expectations and behaviors from peacetime CEO and wartime CEO. I got the impression about the wartime CEO direction of these articles, and that fuels into what Chris said about here and now, act bold, you have to save, and survival topic, as opposed to balancing, okay, what the new normal will look like, and should we focus on building for it now? That were a few impressions I got.
Thank you. I had the same exact reaction of this is a wartime, peacetime conversation, right? It's the same thing. Love it. Thank you. Sally, how about you?
So I would have to agree with what everyone has said. And what I would add to that is the theme that was really present for me and actually irritating in some sense was this sort of tendency to say it's either we have to move from this to this. This isn't going to work. This was there. We need to move to this. And then when they got into the description, they talk about, well, actually both are important. So I think it was every single article highlighted a number of really essential both ands that, or polarities that organizations have to be attending to. We may need to be focusing or building muscle in some areas that we haven't had because this has been such an extreme disruption, and it's a great opportunity to expand that. But that's what I saw, is that they're all looking at a whole bunch of both ands, and some of them are seeing them as we need to move from this to this.
Great, thank you. Gina, I saw you joined. Will you be participating? We can't hear you. You're on mute.
I'm muted. Okay. Did it go now? Okay, sorry about that. Yeah, I did join. I'm sorry I was late. I was late because I was late. I will participate.
Okay, great. Did you see any themes in the articles?
Echoing what I've heard so far, my reaction to everything was, this is stuff you're supposed to be doing anyway. There wasn't the commenter before me that said, this is kind of a force fit, no new thinking. There was nothing there, especially the part about, you know, having to invest more in reliability. Why would you not want to be reliable any other time? That's why you want to be reliable, so that when things go wrong, you have a foundation. So exactly what the other people said, just there just isn't really anything new here.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. What was that?
Gina's audio is just not cooperating if she's not unmuted. It seems as soon as somebody else starts talking, we start hearing it through her.
I didn't actually say anything. And then what it keeps telling me is the host is muting me, Tanya. I'm not sure if you are, that's fine, but that's what I'm experiencing.
Yeah, so as soon as Jardina started talking, we were getting feedback from you based on the secret yellow box.
Okay, all right, that's fine. I think I might know why I'm in the virtual machine, so I will stay. Is it okay when I talk, or should I just not talk?
Yeah, it's okay when you talk.
I will stay on mute then most of the time, and then just go off mute to talk.
Cool, thanks. All right, I think that was everybody who said they wanted to participate. Did I miss anybody? Okay, awesome. So now what we're gonna do, so we usually go through and we ask everybody, which was your favorite, which was your least favorite? So we're gonna try that with a poll. So Tanya, if you can help me out, go ahead and run the poll, there you go. Which article did you like best? And then we'll get to see quickly. And then I'll give everyone a chance to comment if you want to comment on what everybody liked. But let's first just see what the system reveals here. And then Tanya wants, oh, there we go. Okay, so the polling results. So it looks like the most votes were for the triple helix. Second most is for the new boardroom, the agility to resilience. And then what newly remote teams need right now. And then thank you, Eddie. And then the last one was the network of teams. So any comments or observations on what people liked? I'm just gonna let you jump in. I'm not gonna call on you in order for this one.
Yeah, I the two that received the least, I think were the lightest ones. It was like, oh yeah, blah, 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 blah. And it was very prescriptive. And what I liked about the boardroom was again, you know, we've heard so much about agility, and I think it's been somewhat trivialized a bit. And then I liked kind of the regrounding around the need to really build that resiliency into organizations. So I thought it was refreshing to see a perspective around almost going back to basics. And let's make sure that we have the capability and some of the muscle memory in our organizations to be able to rebound from significant events. And I like the triple helix one too. I think a refreshing way of talking about building collaboration across parties with diverse interests and a lot of self-interest in a partnership.
Great, thank you. Anyone else have a comment? Jean, it looks like you're unmuted again. I don't know how that happened. Anyone else, but I'm not echoing, so that's good. Anyone else comments on what we saw there about what showed up as the favorite and what didn't?
I like the triple helix as well, because it was very interesting for me. I'm not very often exposed to the environments with multiple players. So it's either a partnership or just two parties participating, but not as many players with diverse interests. So I was very curious around what principles can help you design the collaboration in a sustainable and meaningful way, in fair way. Honestly, my least favorite was fake dichotomy of agility and resilience, because, well, I'm coming from business agility community, and our understanding of agility includes resilience. Resilience is an integral part of the agility. So I was like, well, why do you put the dichotomy there? Because there is none, at least from my understanding of the subject. So that's for me.
Yeah, I had a bit of a reaction to that as well. Okay. Anyone else comments on what was the favorite?
Well, I voted for the what remote teams need right now, because mm-hmm. I really liked that it was based on some, you know, some surveying, and then there were some kind of interesting things coming up, like the insight about, you know, choosing tools, asynchronous tools and online tools, and the different ways of working that people didn't initially embrace. But I also just wanted to make a comment on the triple helix one. I really liked it as well, mm-hmm. but there were some things about it that I found that I really struggled with. So I loved the question that it posed about how to get entities with different interests aligned and how they could work together effectively. And then I got quite fascinated that it started to talk about trust and the relationship between having different interests and trust. And I thought, oh, that's really where they need to dive into. I felt like it was really a missed opportunity, because I was really missing them looking into, you know, what is the research really telling us about trust. And then I was really quite shocked that then they emphasized so much this kind of need for sanctions. And you know, okay, I don't think that having stronger sanctions is the solution to developing trust. But, you know, I might be wrong. And from what I've seen, also transparency is not necessarily the solution. So I found it a really kind of challenging conclusion that they drew. Although I found the study really interesting, but was for me a bit strange.
If I could build on that a little bit, I also both liked and disliked that article. I work actually for an organization that is three organizations in one, and I saw a lot of my company in this. It's a very hard thing to describe, but there are three actual entities. It's a healthcare, so it's both the hospitals, the doctors, and the insurance, and each one has their own aims. They all have their own sort of cultures, and yet they work together. And some of what I thought was interesting was some of the structuring, but at the same time, while trust is the only way things ever get done, the sanctions thing is just the exact opposite of what would actually cause them to work together better. It's more of a shared goal. It's more of that shared purpose that actually seems to generate better alignment when they are disaligned. It's not, let me, you know, censor you for not having done your thing. So it's very, I don't know, I felt a little too structured and a little maybe too hypothetical.
Mm-hmm. I'll add on to that as well, because I have the exact same thing. My favorite was a survey, because I just thought it was incredibly useful, especially the point about having to have asynchronous and synchronous communication, and also the insights into productivity, because I've been seeing a lot of research around people really not wanting to get back in the office. I mean, they're actually more productive. They miss the social side of it, but otherwise they're more productive. So that's kind of supporting a lot of that research. On the point about the sanctions though, I did like that article for that reason, because my observation has been that yes, it works better when you're united around a goal. However, you need some mechanism, because people, you know, you do have some bad actors and bad behaviors, and that doesn't get addressed. And then everyone ends up just walking away and pointing fingers, and you don't learn anything, and you don't get anything done. So I thought that was actually an interesting concept that that should be explored more.
Thank you. Sally, so, I see you trying to jump in there.
Yeah, just so building on what everyone has said, it was very hard to pick a favorite because I didn't have a favorite. As I mentioned earlier, something about each of them irritated me. And this one, and maybe it's because I was involved a number of years ago with a large organization design project or initiative that was about the regeneration of a river valley in Northeast Ohio that had been, and the framework was sustainability. So this, and we ended up actually creating a triad that was a big part of the design idea. There were a variety of elements that came out of the design. But what bothered me about this from the very beginning is not considering the environment as even a player. And I think what they said is that the natural environment cannot react in the same way human beings and their organizations can. So I kind of had a WTF about that one. And wondering, is it that they can't react the way humans do, or they don't react the way humans do? And maybe there's actually some opportunities to learn from how they do react, how the natural environment does react. But then building on what everyone has said about sanctions and Gina, with what you were saying, I think naming it is important. And there's another side to that, which is really being able to also kind of highlight, or what is it, catch people doing something right, which may be more powerful than actually creating sanctions or having that be a primary approach. And then the other thing that I wondered about when they talked about cybernetics, am I getting that right? And, you know, which the science of communications and automatic control systems in both machine and living systems. And this really felt very prescriptive to me. There was much of this, it felt more mechanistic than it did really coming from a living system. So I just had some questions around that. So I guess the fact that there were so many questions and so much conversation means this really was was an interesting article.
Yeah, I like that, the triple helix one, for similar reasons. But the thing I liked about it was not what the article had in it. It was what it was making me think about. So the design rules at the end, I'm thinking, so I work a lot in public services in the UK in a consulting role. So it's quite nice to be able to look across the system and look at how different people behave. Their motivations going into any sort of collaboration is exactly what the article said. It's the meeting before the collaboration meeting, the bit that says, don't give all of our ideas away. Just make sure you give enough to be able to take maximum output for what we want. That kind of self-interest behavior I thought was really interesting. And the thing the article started to do was draw out the issue with program management, how program management is not just about a set of tools and processes and great, we can get everybody together and look at a project chart and say who's done what they said they were going to do. The whole essence of conflict moderation and pulling out some of that perhaps poor behavior that's not driving us towards a common outcome as a collaboration. It's great that you might all be pulling off in your own directions, getting what you want. But as a partnership here, we signed up to do what we said we would do at the end. People come and go. So that idea of a kind of a conflict moderator and somebody orchestrating that partnership through behavior, not just processes and tools and all the other stuff that we've seen in project management, I thought was excellent. It was more about what the article made me think about rather than necessarily what was in there. So there might be a slight contradiction, but I don't know. It was good.
Provocative. Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Chris, I think I had a similar reaction that it was a good thought article, but like Sally mentioned, it felt really mechanistic. So I don't know whether that's just the writing style that was used, but when you started thinking about some of the principles underneath that, it was, once I got past that, it was a better article for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sally? So I just wanted to add to what Chris was saying. When I first read through the rules and I'm seeing evaluator and project man, evaluator, project management, didn't say project manager, but I think I was reading project manager. I was sort of moving back from it, but what it was really describing is roles that are throughout the, you know, the entirety of the collaboration, not a person that is charged. So I think in some ways, I think the article could have been written to more effectively communicate some of the ideas that were there, but not necessarily seemed to be headline.
Yeah. So I think we've self-organized ourselves into almost everyone who wanted to participate took a turn, except maybe Anne. Anne, did you have any comments about the Fate Your Favorite article?
So I guess I focused more I liked the Triple Helix article, but I guess I was kind of focusing more on the others in the context of the situation that we're in. And I chose my favorite being the the agility resilience one, because in the last couple of years I have a consulting business. So I work with clients, and in the last couple of years, I've had a lot of requests for org design to make us more agile, small A, big A, whatever you want to call it. Half the time they don't know themselves, I think. And I've really struggled with it at times in terms of, you know, kind of saying, well, what, you know, is it just a word that you're using, or what is it that you're trying to achieve by being more agile? And it's a question that I think mostly clients or people who are working in an organization, we don't quite know how to answer it ourselves. They know what they want to do, but is it agility? Is it not? Kind of, anyway, we can get all caught up in what it is, what it isn't. But I guess for me, this article, why I liked it in particular, was that it enabled, it gave me some new thoughts. They're not rocket science, but it gave me a few points to think about. Because one of my clients, I mean, I'm not working with them right now, in that they're really focusing on their core operations. You know, they've been in their mobilization, stabilization phases. But as they come back to planning stage now, I know that they're going to resurrect the question around some work that we did. And actually, interestingly, it brought in a bit of network teams as well, some work that we did last year on their org design. And sorry, I'm waffling a bit, but really I'm saying that I liked this article because it brought me back to some fundamentals around the difference between agility and some basic fundamentals that, as somebody on the call already said, you would be doing, I think, anyway, but we should reground a little bit in some fundamental principles as opposed to jumping to the new thing. Yeah. So that was why I liked it.
I think the idea of recovery is really interesting. It's what the lens I put on the remote working article that Jody spoke about. It wasn't about an article about, you know, top 10 tips for remote working that we're all pretty sick of. It was the, going to the org design, the kind of recovery bit, so if we're all now communicating so much more digitally rather than the corridor conversations, and that how the work really gets done in an organization is not through the hierarchy, it's through the networks, right? So if we're now doing that and leaving a digital footprint on all the conversations we're having, I think the fascinating thing about that article, to your point, Anne, is, so what are the clues in terms of recovery about how we can make work happen more effectively going forward? My client at the moment is quite interested in that. So I like the article because it's helping me move them on, which is, we're just about to go in and do a kind of an org design piece on the back of a fairly ambitious operating model. And we're starting to look at their Microsoft Analytics that says, this is quite interesting because they use the Microsoft suite, and it shows you at quite an aggregated level who everyone's collaborating with. And when you when you overlay that sort of data onto the existing org structure, it's a fascinating picture, because guess what? You know, I talk to somebody who's three steps away from my team more than I speak to my own manager, my own peers. And I think for the topic of org design, to be able to move into that way of saying, now that we're leaving that digital footprint, how can we become better in terms of data driven in some of the org design choices we make, not just based on people's kind of instinct or legacy knowledge of the organization.
That's fascinating. Thank you. All right. I think we've kind of hit on what articles people didn't like, but let's just, for fun, let's run the poll. Tanya, if you don't mind. I think by default, we might have this answers. And hey, listen, by the fact that I'm facilitating this time, you're all deprived of my scathing review of the one that I didn't like. So wait for next month for another scathing review.
No, I think, Jardini, you also should be putting in your point of view. We don't want
to
miss that.
I agree. I would love to hear your viewpoint on that.
We're getting there. Don't worry. I don't know if I can hold it back. What was the one? Oh, okay. I missed it. Okay, let's see.
I'll put it back up for you, Jardina.
Oh, okay.
And now everybody has to redo it. Sorry if I relaunch it.
Sorry. Can you guys do it again? Yeah, it was that one. Okay.
All right. Now we'll share.
Thanks. Okay. So the winner is 4 behaviors that help leaders manage a crisis, which was like, I dug out an old article and slapped a new title on it. And then to building a network of teams to weather a crisis. And then we have a tie between the agility to resilience and what newly remote teams need right now. Anything that we didn't talk about there about why we didn't like the articles?
My input there is a lack of examples. Every time I kind of read some of these articles, I'm thinking, yeah, and show me the kind of where it's worked, in what context it works. The team of teams thing from McKinsey was great, but I don't know any of my clients I've ever worked with that would say, hey, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Let's flick from this to this. So that the real lack of evidence and examples kind of really, really, really irritated me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we talked about the first article being really simplistic, but I think the reaction I had to the McKinsey article was, this is really network design. And the notion around network design and network organizations has been around for, it's relatively new, but 5-10 years, but they're packaging it like it's something new, and it's really is not that innovative.
Mm. So if I were to say how I really felt about that one about the network, it just seemed like it was very naive. Like, you're going to go and create a side organization. Like, we know that doesn't work. I mean, you know, come on. There's so many things that they didn't explore about the dangers of the side organization that doesn't have to report in and follow any rules. Come on. And how are you going to then bring that back in for later? It just seemed very, very naive to me. So I agree with how I really felt. Go ahead, Anne.
That wasn't my most disliked one, actually, but I disliked several, but I agree with you. I thought, I read that and I thought, yet again, I actually thought, if I read another article about creating network teams without additional resources, without creating another structure, without, you know, while still trying to do the, you know, all the everyday, but not, no sort of indication how to do it, and it doesn't. I have not yet seen how to make it work. So I'm sort of equally disappointed to hear that you haven't either, but sort of self-satisfied as well. I think for me, the one I didn't like was the one with the survey, remote teams right here, right now, or whatever that one was. Sorry, I can't remember which one that was, but with the survey. And I know somebody said they really liked the survey. For me, it was just quite a small sample size, and I was really surprised at the responses, you know, people saying that they're kind of equally as productive, if not more so, than they have been working in the office, and that doesn't reflect what I've been hearing anecdotally at all. And I don't know, it makes me wonder, is that a local thing? I'm based here in Ireland, So I'm in a much smaller community than some of you. I guess that I just didn't like it because I didn't believe it. I didn't feel it was reflective of what I see and hear. Interesting.
I thought it was good questions. I liked it because I thought it was good questions and it's good things to ask as opposed to everything else, which was, as we said, kind of recycled and retrofitted. Now, it's interesting you bring up experience because, so I'm in the U.S. and we have a company I'm with. We found that, you know, with survey, so they separated safety. Are you worried about safety? Are you worried, you know, or are you eager to get back in the office? The number eager to get back in the office was 17%. Which is incredible. You would have thought it'd be like 50 or 60. So then I did a little bit more, you know, just anecdotal footwork and looked around, and most companies are getting numbers like 10%. So people are really, really liking this flexibility. And that seems consistent to me with plenty of research I've seen over the last 20 years where, 35% or so of jobs can be done remotely, but only 5% are. And that people are willing to take pay cuts to have flexibility. So to me, that all kind of seems to be coming together. And I thought that survey, was a good step in the right direction to kind of start shaping those questions and figuring out how people want to work differently. Although I agree with you, it was a small sample and it was biased. You know, they said all that, but that's why I thought structurally it was a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I get that. And sorry, I won't hog the thing, but do you know what's really making me interested in this is just that geographical difference. And Chris, you're in the UK. I don't know if everybody else is or where other people are, but I just wonder how much of it, you know, I think if you ask those questions and got those responses in normal time, if you were doing a study on can we really work remotely more easily than we thought or something and took coronavirus out of the picture, I would get it more. I think that what we are in Ireland with our form of lockdown is that people are working from home, but they also have their kids, no childcare, and, you know, all those other things. So I think whilst they are working from home, it's not the way you would do it if you were just transitioning to a work from home remote working model. So I think that's certainly skewing where people are saying, oh God, no, get me back to the office as fast as possible.
Same thing in the US. The schools are closed. I mean, there are some daycares open, but for the most part, people are doing everything.
Yeah, I assume that was a 17% that maybe they just want to, you know, they're the ones trying to manage all the different kids and all that. But I think they corrected for that. They asked them, you know, under other circumstances. However, we are seeing that, I mean, you can't just take your work and move it online. And some of it might be that everybody's online. I mean, we've all dealt with the difficulty of that, having some people be remote and some people be online and trying to patch things back together. And, you know, so it's a very different environment. So, but, you know, again, I think that those kind of questions are a step in the right direction to figure that out.
You know, I have a whole closet full of work clothes that is going to completely go to waste. Just saying.
How does I guess my thought about kind of hearing the debate is how does the context and nature of the work change the results to the survey? So the article we're talking about, I think, made an explicit point to say most of the audience were knowledge workers, hence the high perhaps volumes. But Gina, I'm curious that kind of 17%, is that Is that a split balance of people that don't kind of do field work versus office-based work?
Yeah, it was everybody, because we have, for this survey, we have people that are in the field, you know, delivering home health care or some kind of service. Also people that were always in the office, and then also people at home. As an organization of about 35,000 people, we had at the time 26,000 were capable of working remotely, but they didn't always work remotely. So that was, we really had a fairly small number that we had to scramble to be able to get them at home. So that's why that number was so interesting, was because so many people already have the capability to be remote. So what I wondered and what I'd like to see explored is the social side of that, because my guess is that a lot of people, just purely my guess, is that a lot of people go to the office because they think they're going to miss something. And they would prefer not to, but they can't rely on people to actually based on you know that bit of information.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's where I think the interesting question becomes is what is the impact of this in 2 months' time? So this kind of the build-up of employee expectation that they are going to work differently, and actually the power balance there is quite interesting in terms of volume of workforce that want to influence the change versus the traditional decision makers. But then I think we enter a really important simplistic way of thinking, which is about me, not we. So I want to work differently because it works for me. We may well have been able to sustain and tolerate that for a very short period of time, but your work is part of a much bigger system. So just because you want to work that way, that may impact either the people that you serve or other people that are dependent from you across the system. So I think there's an interesting design challenge coming up in the next quarter, which is the power of employees wanting to work differently versus the bigger question of what works for people that we serve.
If I could jump in on that point, just from the healthcare lens, my organization locally, we used to deliver about 10% of our care virtually. In this situation that we're all in, we're now delivering just under 90% of our care virtually. And so what's really interesting is we had a lot of clinicians who were just like, it can't be done. We don't do it. That's not possible. And the conversation is significantly changing to a design conversation around what should we be doing? Because clearly what we thought was in the way is not in the way. So 90% is too much, but 10% is too little. So where do we want to move this? And it's a very fascinating kind of back and forth conversation about, well, what do the members need? What do we need? What's the best clinical outcome? How do we start to think about this differently? Like, are there parts of the way we think we have to do it that we could decouple? Like, do you do your tests over here and we do the engagement virtually instead of always wrapping everything into a sequential encounter? So it's been a fascinating sort of, it's very messy right now because everybody's heads are kind of everywhere in terms of thinking about how to shift. But I see my organization is definitely seeing the opportunity to shift. We'll see what they do.
Mm, great, thank you. You know, one of the articles, the one called What Newly Remote Teams Need Right Now, talked about restructuring work process to be more self-contained. Did anyone have a reaction to that? Anne, I see you nodding there. Go ahead.
I did. And I think it was in reference, just from memory, there was, because I was actually looking for some reference that I either missed or it's not there, to the kind of the gap that arises in not just the social interactions, but also the opportunities to just kind of dynamic kind of innovation, creativity, whatever, just ideas, you know, that you get when you bump into somebody and say, oh, you know, and then an idea comes from a conversation or they have it or whatever. And you don't get that on if you've got to go and structure a call, or you may not think of the person that you would have bumped into. So I did, I don't know, did I miss some reference to that, but I didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And from that thought, I read that piece which referenced, I think it was about the collaborative work more so than what I was thinking about, and just, you know, so we should just restructure the work then, not to need to be collaborative.
Well, that was my reaction, was we've been trying to get people to collaborate all these years. Yeah, go ahead, Gina.
Hi. So the reaction to that, I think, is to connect the other, it's the synchronous and asynchronous. And then another concept that I got out of another, because I've been, you know, on all these different forums and how to do these different things. The other one is what they were calling generative versus linear. And this wasn't in the article, but it was so enabling people to, you know, to get together, not to just assume, like in a conversation, you know, you take turns. So that was a synchronous versus asynchronous. But the other forum suggested that it's, you have like a brainstorming and then you make it linear. You have a brainstorming, you make it linear. And then the other concept with that was to go to small groups and then come back to the plenary. So those three things together is what I processed in answer to your question. But again, I was getting this out of other forums. They didn't talk about it that much. It would have been nice if they'd gone into it a little bit further.
Yeah. Jody, did you have an addition to that?
Yeah. Well, actually, there's so many thoughts now from everything that's come up. So it's such a great discussion. But one of the reactions I had is that I've just noticed, even from my own personal way of working, is that this situation has forced me to try some different things that I would have resisted. So my personal preference is really to work things out in a personal conversation. And I notice that now I'm, you know, somehow I'm being forced to work things out through different ways, through text messaging or working on shared documents or something like that. And to my surprise, my positive surprise, it's working really well. And I think that it's just a small example of how, you know, I'm seeing opportunities there, even though, you know, I thought it's almost my area of expertise is helping teams figure out the best ways to work. And it's like, oh, there's even more ways. But on the other side of the coin, I'm also seeing some maybe disturbing patterns. And this is probably anecdotal, but some editors of scientific journals have said that they have seen, on the one hand, this overall increase in the number of papers being submitted in the last weeks, which is a good thing, but a dramatic drop off in the number of women scientists submitting papers, which is something they're watching for because they're trying to increase that overall. So they're speculating, well, perhaps this situation is affecting the women in our target group in a different way. So I think that one of the things coming up from that article and this discussion is really getting a bit more granular on remote work having an impact. Sometimes it's having a positive impact, sometimes it's having a negative impact, depending, of course, on the type of work that we're doing, but also depending perhaps on, you know, family situations, demographics. I don't know, I'm just making it up. Could be our generation or whatever other factors.
That's interesting.
No, so, I think that there's a point there around personal circumstances really do have a significant impact on how we work virtually. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can take control of some of those personal circumstances. Some of them we can't. And so I think that's what we're starting to see through this experiment, if you will.
Yeah, everybody's different. So I'm noticing that we are getting close to the top of the hour here, top of the half hour. As usual, it's never enough time together, even with my little tips and tricks that I tried. So I am going to ask if we can maybe close by just putting a word in the chat window, a one word checkout of kind of what you're taking, doesn't have to be one word, but short, of what you're taking with you from the call today. And while you're doing that, I am going to thank you all for your attendance today and your great participation. Thank you for your thank yous. And I'm going to hand it back over to Tanya. Thank you.
All right. So as we mentioned at the beginning, we do record these calls. So I will put a copy of it. And there really wasn't a whole lot of content going on until this last comment that's article related in the chat box. So I doubt I'll add this, but I will let everyone know when that's the case. We're going to be making an announcement soon that our content from our 2020 conference that got canceled because of the limitations in place. We're going to be doing a virtual series coming up in June. So June 18th to the 25th, we'll be offering a portion of them. Not all of the presenters were available to go virtual, but we'll be sharing that announcement. So we're very excited about that possibility and seeing how that works with everybody and how to make these kind of conversations, which are so important in the conference, a part of the way that the presentations take place in lieu of it just being a webinar and the presenters sharing their information. So if anybody's had any experience with some great things that they've participated in recently that we might suggest and pass along to the planning committee as a way to engage people during these sessions, shout and let me know. We would very much appreciate it. And other than that, I wish everyone good health, a great day, good spring weather.
Hey, Tanya, wait, we've got the upcoming pop-up.
That promotion will go out today. So we're doing, based on a comment when we closed out the virtual or leading in virtual teams, somebody was looking for what's the future of work going to be coming up. So we're going to hold a pop-up conversation on May the 15th, and I'll be sending that announcement out probably later today to participate in that as a additional virtual connection for everybody in the community.
Yeah, and could I add just a little thing for all you? It's going to be a multi-part, and it's a little bit of a discovery where we're asking what are we noticing and how work is changing and what is the implications to work. And we know we're just a couple months into this pandemic. And then what we're going to do is schedule a follow-up to say, okay, here's what we thought in May. Now, as we get to June or July and August, we're going to ask the question again. So if you can find times on your calendars and participate, that would be great. That's it.
Well, Jardina, thank you so much for leading today and trying the different formats and using some of the extra Zoom tools. And we'll see who's lined up for the, I don't know if we'll actually hold a May conversation. We'll have to figure that out. Or I'm sorry, it'll be the June conversation because the June one will fall right in the dates of when we'll be doing the conference. Mm-hmm. But we'll see the May group. And don't remember who's facilitating then. But if anybody else that's a part of the community is interested in volunteering to be a facilitator in the future, we're kind of transitioning away from it always being two people on an ODF board member and an EODF board member and just looking to have the community help in this role. And we give you a little template of how it works. And as you can see, working from home mm-hmm. with students and husbands and dogs, you know, if you're interested in stepping into the role like Jardina did today, let me know. That would be much appreciated.
It was super fun. You should totally do it.
Thanks for adding the twist, Jardina. Love it.
I liked it, Jardina. It was great.
You're so welcome. It was fun. All right.
All right. Take care, everyone.
Bye.